welcome to the very first Shut Up and Ride podcast stage here at Your Horse Live. Very exciting.
That's quite a mouthful, isn't it?
It is quite a mouthful, but I'm very excited. Sponsored by the brilliant, can't say enough wonderful things about them, Charles Owen. We got Jade from Charles Owen over here. She is literally the light of my life. And we're very excited that our first guest here at Your Horse Live is going to be the wonderful dressage superstar. I mean, like, I feel Olympics are in your future. Lewis Carrier, thank you so much for being our first guest here at Your Horse Live.
Thank you so much for having me. It's it's an absolute pleasure.
I should say Simon's here as well. Sorry. Simon, you are here. You have come. You were on ponies this morning.
We should say you're here too, Jenny. She's come all the way from Canada for this, specifically for this. So we're very lucky to have you here.
Oh, thanks, Simon. Thanks. So Your Horse Live is not just about the shopping. It's got demos. Everything is going on. And you are doing, Lewis, your first masterclass in front of... There's a big audience here, by the way. Good luck.
Thank you. I might need it.
Your first ever masterclass. First of all, how are you feeling about this? And are the nerves kicking in? Not to try and make you feel worse, by the way.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit nervous. I've been sort of reading through my notes this morning and we'll still read them a little bit later. But I'm super excited to do it a little bit later. I'm excited.
How do you prepare for something like that? Because I'm doing a demonstration on Monday somewhere else and I'm thinking, how am I going to prepare for this?
Do you just wing it? Tips already.
Do you just wing it or do you... Because I'm feeling like I'm going to wing it on Monday, but I mean, how are you going to do it?
I mean, I've got a plan. Whether it goes ahead when we actually get into it, that's the question. But no, I've got it all written down. I've got it in my mind. I've been visualizing a lot. That's a lot what I do when I sort of practice for tests as well, visualizing in my mind what I'm going to do. And then when you actually get into the arena or you kind of then just got to do what you got to do.
Have you run the ideas past anyone or is this all in your head?
Yeah, my wife. I run past everything.
Wife is in the audience, hands up, wife. Yeah, well done.
I don't do anything without her saying, yeah, that's fine. Otherwise, I look like an idiot.
The team behind the scenes, they're so important, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Can I just say, this is the definition of the difference. Anyone says, what's the difference to someone in the outside world between an eventer and a dressage rider? I'm doing a demo and I'm winging it. I'm doing a demo and I've made notes and I've planned everything. Like, Platt's in the lorry, Platt's at home the day before. Yeah. Like, this is the actual definition right here. Sod what you two actually do in the arena. This is what keeps you... It is true, though, isn't it?
It absolutely is true. And I was actually talking to my dad on the way here and I said, I'm doing a lecture demonstration thing on Monday and I'm a bit nervous about it. And he's like, well, have you prepared? And I was like, not really, no. And he's like, well, you need to write something down. And I was like, no, I was just going to wing it. And he's like, you can't do that. And I was like, well, I can try, but I just know it with past history, I'm going to end up just winging it. That's just how I roll. But you obviously roll with notes and being organized,
yeah,
which
is good. Yeah, I have to be. Otherwise, I have to plan ahead. Again, it doesn't always go the way you want it to, but I think my OCD, being a dressage rider, I definitely have to have it all planned out in my mind. Otherwise, I have a bit of a meltdown.
And for this demonstration, you're going to be riding your best horse. Tell us a little bit about him.
Diego, yeah. So he's 17 this year. We got him as a family when he was four, so we've had him a very,
wow,
very long time.
That's great. So he's a member of the family, basically.
Absolutely. And yeah, he's fantastic. He's done some amazing... He's done way more than we ever thought that he would. He was shortlisted for Paris last year. And yeah, he's awesome. So I'm super excited to take him into the arena and hopefully show a few things of what he can do. And it's nice for him to just be in that kind of atmosphere without having to compete as well, because he gets quite hot and he really enjoys. We've done the London Horse Show the last 2 years and he absolutely loves it. So going into a kind of a similar sort of arena without actually having to compete, I think it's really good for him. It should sort of hopefully make him realize that it's not always exciting and there's not always a prize giving or music and whatever.
Is he one of those, if people go and watch Lewis's masterclass, which I hope you all will...
What time is the masterclass?
It's 2:30.
2:30. We'll look. I'll look at
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
Always ask the wife.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yeah.
Always ask. 1 o'clock. But is he one that the crowd can go woohoo and give him a cheer?
I'm sure he'll enjoy it.
It's good practice. Good practice.
But he'll probably get very excited. So that's fine.
Will he?
That's fine. Yeah.
We should give you one of these shut up and ride neck straps for
you. Thank you. I might need that for one of my new 4-year-olds. Yeah.
And am I right in saying that he is one of the, I don't know how many horses have done this, but he has taken you all the way through from juniors, young riders, to then national champion at senior level.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no horse, I don't think, that's ever done anything like that.
I think that deserves a round of applause,
don't you? That does deserve a round of applause. National champion, everybody. That is amazing. And obviously, you are a very talented rider, but to have a horse that can do that as well, and obviously your training, but that is incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, but no, Diego, I mean, he's fantastic. Not every horse you can do that with. And I mean, even, you know, back when we first had him, you kind of think that these achievements you might be able to do, but we've been incredibly lucky and time, and he's just achieved what he's achieved, and we just kept going along, kept doing the next thing. We bought him. We actually found him at Dan Greenwood's yard, a fellow Grand Prix rider. My trainer at the time, Diana Fisher, her and her husband Mark are actually the saddlers for the GB team. And Di has trained with Carl for many, many, many years. And through Di, Carl and Dan, we found Diego at Dan Greenwood's yard for sale. He was a really, really naughty, young horse. And we thought, oh well, why not? Why don't we get him? He was a little bit cheaper because the person that had him before brought him over from the Netherlands as a stallion, and they didn't get on with him. He was very, very naughty. So we got him. Di started riding him a little bit at the beginning, and then I took him on, and then many, many years later, he's achieved what he's achieved. And
did you, right from the first time you sat on him, did you think this is going to be a fabulous horse, or was it a bit of a light bulb moment as later down the line?
Yeah, you know, he was a nice young horse. He wasn't absolutely unbelievable, but to be honest, he was my first horse, so I didn't really know.
Not much to compare to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I could, you know, I'd see the amazing horses that the top riders were riding, like Utopia, Vallegro, and Alf, and the amazing horses at London 2012. But I never thought that Diego, he didn't look like them. But for me, over the years, we just kept sort of chipping away, and the sort of goal was to get to young riders. We made it to the Young Rider European Championships in time, and then the next goal was Under 25 Grand Prix. We then did 2 years of Under 25 Grand Prix European Championships. And the next goal was, okay, we've done that. What do we do now? Well, we've got to move on to seniors. We managed to then get on to Nations Cup senior teams and then just kept going. And then last year, you know, getting all the way to being shortlisted for Paris and then becoming national champion is just, yeah, amazing.
That's so cool, being national champion.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to be with Diego on the front of the British Dressage magazine. That was one
and
of
the
those
shortlisting.
Things, you know?
Wow,
yeah, I know.
I mean, that
Simon's
is
jealous.
I am very jealous. I am. But what's really nice is like that you clearly really appreciate having him, and I think a lot of riders don't quite realize how lucky they are at the time when they've got a fabulous horse. And he sounds like you really appreciate having such a fantastic horse.
Yeah, I mean, I think I really do now, looking back. I think along the way, I think you don't sort of think about...
You don't really appreciate it, don't you?
Exactly. But now looking back, especially now I'm training on the younger horses and I've got 2 9-year-olds that are stepping up to Grand Prix, up to that level. And I'm thinking, you know, are they going to be as good as Diego? That's probably the hardest thing. When you've done it once, you've got to then do it again.
Yeah.
And you're comparing them as well, the young horses to your special one.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And yeah, if Diego hadn't made it, then I thought, okay, well, the next one, maybe we will make it. But because he's got so far, he's actually got, you know, almost to the pinnacle of what we wanted to do. Actually, the next two, I'm like, well, come on, you know, you need to sort of step up your game. So actually, you know, it's a lot of pressure on, I feel, on me and on them, and it's tough actually.
And you've got Diego, you've got these 2 9-year-olds, you've got your fresh 4-year-old.
Yes.
Is that your team, or have you got other horses coming through as well?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, it's quite a small string of horses. We have a couple of other horses that are owned by a client, a Hong Kong rider, who I help, and she's got 2 lovely schoolmasters so I help her, and her goal is to hopefully get onto Asian teams. But those 4 horses, yeah, they are my string at the moment.
And I know, like, with only 4 horses, it's that doesn't make it into a business. sorry, I'm so terribly nosy, but how do you make it work?
Is By the way, coaching? This podcast is just a fun Simon's way of like finding out about people's businesses and like,
being really
how can
nosy.
I do my own business better?
Yeah, but to be honest, that's exactly what I do with everyone as well. I'm always asking you because it's unbelievably difficult. And I don't think young people nowadays realize quite how difficult. And I only sort of realized over the last, because I've been running my own business for the last sort of 4 or 5 years, I think, and everyone over the years, you know, I trained with Gareth back in the day, and he said, you know, he's always said, you know, make sure you work for someone for as long as possible. And I was like, I don't really understand what. But then suddenly when you run your own business, you realize quite how difficult it is.
So many balls to keep in the air.
Yeah, it's such a fine balance with costs and, you know, and I have two of my own horses as well. So trying to keep, you know, money to keep them going, it's unbelievably difficult. So
and
it's
you've
such
got
a
to
challenge.
Then ride and perform at your best,
yeah,
and try and get on teams, and then obviously goals, LA and things like that.
Yeah,
and so it's running the business is one thing, but then you've got to actually go out and perform and come on stages and do masterclasses.
Of course, the main thing for us riders is we want to be competing. We want to be going up the levels and hopefully competing at national championships and Olympics. But of course, you need to then be doing other things to then supplement your riding, so teaching and demoing and doing clinics and just all of that. So, of course, that takes you away from what you really want to be doing, which is just riding and training your horse. Mm. But that's all part of it. And it's working out that balance.
So what would a normal day for Lewis Carrier involve?
So I'm not like a jockey. I don't get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm not going to lie. But I'm getting up again. I get up in the morning. I start riding, and I sort of ride from sort of 8 till 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, that takes sort of the morning is riding, and then the afternoon I leave for teaching or.
And do you find that you coach every afternoon?
Most afternoons, yeah.
Yeah, because I've found it with my coaching. When I've done that, I end up spreading. Well, it's a bit different because I'm normally teaching jumping, so. If I spread it out through the week, it actually makes me more knackered. So yeah. I tend to focus it all into one day.
Yeah, I like to have a good routine. So I like every day to be sort of similar. I like to get up and feel like, right, this is what I'm doing. Ride the horses in the morning, teach in the afternoon. And then there are, you know, the odd day here and there. So like on Sunday, I'll be teaching all day at Summerford Park. So then there are sort of days where I then do, you know, the horses have a day off and then I go off and teach for the day. So yeah, I do that. But I do like to have quite a consistent routine and I like to feel like every day is fairly similar so that my headspace is always the same.
And a lot of people sat here will be going, he's a dressage rider. He's obviously come from a dressage lineage and you've been, but you didn't, did you? You started off like just in a riding school or you didn't come from this big line of dressage people excellent at the sitting trot?
Yeah, absolutely. My parents aren't massively horsey at all. My mum had a, you know, like probably all young girls had a bit of an interest in ponies and horses, but they were both in the military when they were a lot younger. So we moved around a little bit through around the country and abroad and whatnot. And then my dad went into his niche and my mum did her niche as well. And then sort of fell into riding, really. There was a couple of local riding schools, which I was extremely lucky to have, because I think nowadays it's incredibly difficult for young people to get into the sport. There aren't that many young, there aren't that many riding schools out there.
Oh, we need Pammy Hutton. She'd be on a rant about this. It upsets her on a daily basis,
It is a real problem.
It really is. Because where are young people going to get into the sport? But I was very lucky. There was a couple of local riding schools. I rode there when I was a lot younger, probably like 5 or 6. And then one day, mum was like, oh, should we get a pony? And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, great. and kept it at a livery yard near our house. And that was it. That was literally it. From then on, things just fell into place, and I started to have my own horses, and I started to go up the levels, and yeah.
But you were obviously very talented, though. Did that come apparent when you were? Because you don't just go up through the levels. I know you're saying it like, oh yeah, we just went. You have to have a talent there.
Well, I remember when I first started, it wasn't in dressage. I did pony club, and I did a bit of everything. I did a bit of eventing. I did a bit of British eventing with the ponies, and that did terribly. So I went, well, that's not going to be my thing. I did a bit of show jumping and I still love doing all of that. And maybe if I went back in time, maybe jumping would be something that I went into instead.
No, you're too much of a planner. You're too organized. You can't be an inventor. I'm sorry. We won't allow
show, show jumping.
Oh, show jumping. Oh, yeah, you could be a show jumper.
Show jumping. Sorry, what was we saying?
I know you may have you went down the dressage path, but people obviously saw a talent in you to keep going.
So I remember when I started being taught by Di, and I sort of looking into like magazines or videos of how dressage horses went, and I was like, oh, you know, how do I ask a horse to be on the bit? And I was sort of, you know, playing around, and suddenly I was like, wow, look, yeah, I can ask my horse to be round and supple and on the bit, and that was kind of it. I was like, oh yeah, this is great. Look how impressive we look. And then it kind of went from there, really. But Di was really a dressage trainer, and I always kept falling back to dressage, and the ponies that I had were really dressage ponies, and I was kind of asking them to go around cross country, but they weren't really feeling it. So dressage is what we then really fell into. And then I was in school, and it was sort of, you know, you either do equestrian or I go into acting. My school was very good with like musical theatre, and I did quite a lot of that in school. And it was very much like I either go to London and I pursue that dream, or I go to Hartbury College with Diego and I do that. And my family had sort of invested in this young horse, and I thought, well, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. But I think, you know, whatever I do, I want to put my all into it, and I want to be the best at it, to be honest. And which is why I think, dressage has gone so far.
That is really cool. But talking of putting your all into it, have you, in order to be selected, you know, for the shortlist for the Olympics and whatever, have you had to go abroad to compete? You must have had to make some serious sacrifices to be able to make that happen.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, over the last, I don't know, however many years, we go abroad probably a few times a year.
It is such a nightmare now, isn't it?
Yeah, it
getting
is.
Getting the horses
since,
out there.
Since Brexit, the paperwork and the cost. And we've had some real troubles actually going abroad. It was the under-25 Europeans in 2022, I think it was. And we actually ended up not going because there was a mess up in our paperwork, and we got to Calais and they turned us around and went.
It doesn't need to be a big thing either, does it?
No, the smallest thing. And it wasn't, looking back, maybe we could have done something about it, but it wasn't our job. We put our faith into the people that do the paperwork, and unfortunately they didn't do it correctly. And so that then affected us. We got turned around, came back to Dover, and that was that. We then ended up not going to compete in the European Championships. Absolute nightmare. So, there's been some real problems, and I think something does need to change, to be honest.
And in order to be able to do this, I'm assuming you've had to have support. Have you got sponsors and that help you along the way?
Yeah, loads of sponsors, which is absolutely fantastic. And I've been very lucky to be a part of the World Class program. I'm not this year, but I have been over the last 6 years, and they have been unbelievably supportive. They've helped me sort of transition from being a young rider to competing at the top level. And now that I'm off the program, I'm sort of, you know, free to hopefully get back onto it and find my own path. But the World Class program and lottery funding and Sport England have been absolutely massive over the years. And just the team that I have around me has been extremely beneficial.
And looking ahead, talking about that pathway, what are your, it's a really difficult question to answer when with horses, but where are you looking to go next? What are your big plans?
Well, to be honest, hopefully next year we'll be, I mean, I've had some amazing years and we've been on this sort of upward trajectory. Of course, last year was such a big year with the Olympics and being shortlisted and then being national champion. Trying to then repeat that this year was a really tough ask. And so this year we sort of were just slightly under par. But hopefully next year with Diego, we can then sort of step up again. But then the 2 9-year-olds, the plan with them is to just step up and get back up to Grand Prix and looking forward to the World Equestrian Games, the Europeans, and then hopefully LA. You know, I've got that sort of 3-year plan in my mind.
Very excited. Looking forward to following that.
So I have a question. going back, so anyone who listens to the podcast will know that Ben and Simon, where's Ben? He's not here right now. He will be here in a bit. If they weren't going to be horse riders, they would have gone into musical theatre. Now, Liz, you have just, what is it about horse riders, male horse riders, that have this kind of sideline?
I wanted to go to Hollywood.
You want Hollywood? Theater. Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry, darling. He's very good at accents.
I've heard. Don't ask me to know, because I am absolutely terrible. No.
What is your? Can you sing and dance? Like, what is your talent?
Yeah, don't. She'll get you up.
No, before my voice broke, I was pretty good, I think. But now I haven't sung for a very long time.
Were you a choir boy?
I wasn't a choir boy, but I mean, I did go to a school where there were choristers, but I couldn't give up my life doing that. So I had horses. I couldn't be in the cathedral at 6 o'clock in the morning, at 12 o'clock at night. But I did sing in like the cathedral choir, but just.
Did you
just
have any moments
there.
On the stage? Did you have any glory moments?
Yeah. I'm sure if you search up on YouTube, you'll find a few. But yeah.
Okay, anyone go down a rabbit hole for me? I want evidence of Lewis on the stage. Well, I just think it's really interesting how both you and Ben and so many riders, if their alter ego.
It's funny, isn't it? I suppose it's all performing, isn't it? I suppose you know when you are. Riding with your partner around, whether it be a cross-country course, show jumping, or on dressage, or in anything, you're still sort of performing, and you and the horse are doing it together, and you're doing it the best you can. So I suppose in a way, it's kind of similar, I guess.
Especially dressage.
Yeah.
You know, you are. It is a proper performance, isn't
it? Yeah.
And which is why I'm not very good at it.
You're good at the jumping, Simon.
Jumping,
good,
bit
maybe
is okay.
You need to go see Lewis, get some lessons.
Yeah.
Can you sort out one of his elbows? It drives me mad. And you train. We've got to bring him up with the god of dressage, Mr. Carl Hester.
Yeah.
How long have you trained with him? And did you know what a god he was when you first had lessons with him? You were a youngster.
Oh, like... God, yeah, for sure. I mean, I've always wanted to train with Carl. I mean, I've had some amazing trainers over the years. Di was fantastic at such a young age. I then went to train with the Arlberg family, so Ferdy and Michael Arlberg, and I trained with them for 4.5 years. And to be honest, my foundation of my dressage riding came from there. You know, Ferdy being German, very proper way of riding dressage, and to be honest, that's where my foundation is. And then training with Gareth with the World Class program.
Oh, we love Gareth.
And then eventually sort of transitioning with Carl onto Carl. I actually did have a training session with Carl a very, very, very long time ago when Diego was about 6, and I was at Hartbury and I was on the Elite Academy for dressage, but Diego was this wild 6-year-old and it was a really terrible lesson with Carl, and Carl was probably thinking, who is this guy?
did he say anything to you?
No, he probably doesn't remember, to be honest, but I do. And then years later, obviously, then we are then good enough to transition on to training with Carl, who of course is the face of British dressage.
And whereabouts are you based?
Wiltshire now. I'm originally from Norfolk.
I'm Cambridgeshire.
Okay. Yeah, so yeah, I mean, being around Norfolk, we used to go to Burley every year. You know, I love eventing, and I got a funny story actually. It was cross country day at Burley, and I always used to love sort of, you know, after the cross country, the riders would get off, and you know, fans would be there, and I'd be there with my parents and my sister talking to the, you know, we met William Foxpit, or you know, well done getting around the cross country, and I said to, you know, we talked to Ollie Townend actually. And we were sort of talking to him, and I was like, oh, you know, I want to be a good rider. And he said, don't. And I remember thinking,
he's such a cheery soul.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, oh God, wow, that was motivational. I'm going to prove him wrong. But actually now looking back, I'm thinking, I know what he means. It's tough. It's really tough. But he's done incredibly well. So, to be honest, I've just kind of always thought I'm going to prove him wrong.
Well, that's it. Oliver Townend, the motivational speaker. He's on the stage tomorrow, so we'll have a word with him. Like, yes, your motivation. I want to be a rider. Don't. Just don't.
Don't get into it. That's what he said. And I was about 10 years old. And I was like, oh, okay. But I didn't listen to him, luckily.
No, thank goodness. Thank goodness you didn't. And then obviously when you ride with someone like Carl, we had Abby Lyle on the podcast and she does full hair and makeup before. I wouldn't dare go to Carl's yard without a full face and straight hair. Is that the same for someone like yourself? Do you make sure, obviously not your makeup on, but...
Yeah, I don't put my makeup on.
You never know.
Does he borrow your makeup? I don't.
I don't put any makeup on, but I make sure I'm very smart, you know, yeah.
Polished boots.
Polished boots, yeah. I think it is. There's something that commands respect, isn't there? And that's what I love about horse riding. There is still that level of etiquette, especially in the dress side. I think I'm just old-fashioned. My son puts his hood up and I'm like, no, take it down inside.
No, 100%, because I would never take a horse as well, which I didn't think that was at the right level or was good enough to go to Carl's. You know, if I didn't think it was good enough, then I'm not going until we are going
being,
well enough.
Being respectful exactly, in every way.
Exactly. I don't want to waste his time or him think, oh, you know, what are these guys doing?
just going back to you were in Norfolk before and now you're in Wiltshire. That is quite a big old move. Was that for horses or was that yeah it was so 100%. You're in a better place to be able to compete.
so
not for the we've got controversy laughing going on not for the wife for the horses
So over the years we've moved around. I was at Hartbury College. I then moved from Hartbury, went to the Arbergs, and they're in the Worcestershire area. I then moved down into Devon, worked for Anna Ross down there, so I've been around the country. I then went back home and set up my own place in Norfolk. And
whereabouts?
Just on the edge of Cambridgeshire, so like around Ely.
That okay, area. Yeah.
So sort of Cambridgeshire, Norfolk border. But I realised that the horse, I mean, obviously the eventing around that sort of area is much, much bigger. But the dressage world is just not there.
Yeah.
So I realised and I kind of got dragged away by my wife, which was, it was a good move.
Dragged away kicking and screaming, apparently.
And so, yeah, we moved to Wiltshire and we've been there for the last 3 to 4 years.
We are going to throw this out. If anyone's got a question, dressage related or not, or just about his previous life in musical theatre. But on this podcast, we have a tradition, Lewis, which is two things. What is your equestrian pet peeve and what's annoyed you this week? So you might need time to think about it. So we might throw out, or would you like us to see if anyone's got any questions first and have time to think about those ones? It doesn't have to be horse related, the what's annoyed you. Simon's laughing.
The thing
right?
is, there's so many pet peeves, to be honest. So I don't think, and again, I'm definitely a little bit OCD, which I really have to try and. So there are so many things which really frustrate me in the equestrian world.
Let's have a list.
Have a lie back, Mr. Cushion. This could be your therapy.
So to be honest, I don't know. I probably couldn't pick one off the top of my head right now, but I'm sure I can think of one in the next 5 minutes, I'm sure.
What's your pet peeve? I can't remember.
Well, I've got loads. Yours is people who wear...
I'm not a big fan of when people wear long boots that are too short.
Too short.
Yeah, that don't go high
enough. Isn't that most eventers?
Sorry?
Isn't that most eventers?
It is a lot of eventers, yeah. You are absolutely right. It's annoying trotting around the collecting ring.
So I help Harry Mead with his event horses. And Harry always comes out with these massively baggy breeches.
Well, they're about 900 years old, those
they
breeches.
Probably
I think,
are.
His, I think his dad did the Olympics in them in 1970-something.
Exactly. And yeah.
I love that.
But yeah.
I think I've got loads of them, but one really little one that annoys me is people not tucking their into the keepers.
Into the keepers,
and it's
flapping
around on a horse. It drives me mad.
Twisted reins. If someone's riding around with twisted reins, I mean, look, your reins are twisted.
Yeah.
Or twisted stirrups.
And my big one is... So when you're teaching and you say to someone, we've got to get you, you're leaning on the left rein or something like that. And they go, oh, well, the horse leans on it. No, I'm sorry. The horse can only lean on it if you're leaning on
it.
Yeah,
so
I suppose what I'm saying is people blaming the horses for their own lack of training.
Exactly.
One came up for me the other day. Someone sent me a video of a horse and that someone was riding and they were riding without a hat on. And that's something that I really hate.
Riding without a hat. Well, we are sponsored by Charles Owen.
Yeah, well, and what's the point?
I think I'm quite lucky that I've been brought up and I'm in the generation where it's just not a thing. I mean,
doesn't compute for me.
No, back in the day, I always wanted to ride in a Beagler and I wasn't the age. I don't know why, because I think they look awful now. And obviously the strapless hat. And then luckily I wasn't of the age to wear one. And then I wanted to wear a top hat. And again, I wasn't the age to wear one. I didn't get to the level in time. But it's just now, it's just normal to wear hats. I think it's quite old fashioned thing where.
And they're like, they're really cool. Like,
I say it's old fashioned. Yeah, Simon used fashion. To event in a top hat. That's how old he is.
I did.
Right. Think of what's annoyed you. Has anyone got a question? I saw someone was nodding that, I'm going to run to this lady. Look at me sprinting into action. What is your question, my love?
Other than riding, what do you do to keep yourself fit to ride?
Are you saying he's fit or physical, like moisturising regime?
Fit, isn't he?
I'm going to take that as a compliment. To be honest with you, I don't. I'm very lucky that I have a gym membership, and I have for the last year. But I haven't stepped foot in a gym in probably about 3 years.
Was that one of those Christmas, after Christmas sign up?
Yeah,
and then...
that's exactly it. I'm always like, I'm going to go to the gym, you know, I'm going to get myself fit, and I'm going to, but I just don't. Sometimes I ride 14 horses a day. So the thought of going to the gym, if I'm going to do it, it'll have to be in the morning, because at the end of the day, sometimes I'm absolutely knackered. So sometimes I'm riding 14 horses a day going, I don't need to go to the gym.
Carl Hester did tell me this wonderful story about, at the, Tokyo Olympics, obviously they weren't allowed to do very much and go anywhere. So they got these treadmills set up for the Team GB team. And so I meant, and there are videos of them all on it and running. And cause that was all the social media they could give. And I did message him going, I notice you're not on these treadmills, Carl. He's like, of course I'm not, Jenny. I've taken up ping pong. I was like, that was his exercise during the Olympics. But can I just ask, how old are you now?
28.
Okay, well, when you're 40, we'll have this discussion.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I feel there'll be a time where I feel like I probably will need to sort of get a little bit fitter and do a little bit more. But at this time, maybe I don't need to. I don't know. I'm sure I would absolutely love to have time in my day to be able to do that, because we can always better ourselves. I just don't have the time or the motivation, to be honest, right now. But I'm sure one day I will.
When we were 28, we looked as good as that. But now we have to go to the gym, don't we?
What is he insinuating? What are you saying?
Mate, you literally, whenever I speak to you, you're always on a treadmill.
I am. I do work. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I just thought I'd give you a ring, Simon, because I'm on the treadmill.
45-year-old Jenny looks like she ate 18-year-old Jenny. Right. Any other questions? Oh, yes. Lots. Hello, lovely lady. You were drunk on sangria here last few years ago, weren't you?
Mulled wine, sorry. Your music is out there. And I just wondered, you know, anybody that wasn't into horses and dressage, that watching that would sit up, wow. How did you come to get all those pieces you worked with?
Good question.
That's a great question. I mean, swap you for Simon?
I'm just into it myself, and I've got Shirley Bassey, and a lot of the youngsters don't know Shirley Bassey, but she did some remakes of some great tunes. So that's my thing.
Can you give us a bit of Shirley?
Let's get the part. No, don't.
We'll have to get the mulled wine out for that.
That is a good... Shirley Bassey's a really good shout, though. Yeah. She's amazing.
Yeah, tell us about your music. Because that's quite hard, isn't it? To stay current and put good music together that people will enjoy.
I think being from a musical background, music is something I just love. And it's always been part of my life. I mean, it helps me... in my frame of mind, you know, before going into a big test, I'm listening to music and I'm sort of hyping myself up and getting myself into the zone. But picking music for a freestyle, I think is, you know, you've got freedom of doing what you want and choosing some really cool music. So, I'm very lucky that I work with Equidance, Tony Hobden and Kelly, who are amazing. So if anyone out there wanting to make a freestyle, definitely go to them, because Tony as well has got some incredible ideas of music. But I think it's such a good opportunity to express yourself and express your horse, and choosing really cool music. You know, why would you want to choose mundane music? You want something that's impressive and
is it in your head? Is it in your head a lot as you're like trotting around at home on the horses?
Yeah.
Do you know what? No. Oh, God, that yeah. really
to
works.
Honest, it's when I'm watching movies and I listen to a movie score and I'm like, that would be really awesome. So one of my first musics I did, and I made it myself. So when I was a bit younger, and when I did Young Rider Europeans and under 25 musics, I actually did it myself. And it's only the last sort of few years that Tony has made it a lot better and done it for me. but I actually really enjoyed doing it. But I remember I was watching a Tom Cruise movie, and I think it was Night and Day with Cameron Diaz, and a really awesome composer, and I was like, that music is awesome. I've got to use that. And I did. And to be honest, yeah, listen to the radio, watching movies probably is probably the main thing. And I'm like, yeah, that would be really awesome for a canto or a canto pirouette or Piaf or Passage or, yeah.
What would be yours, so cool. Simi?
If you had to do dressage freestyle, what would you freestyle to?
For dressage?
For dressage, yeah.
Oh, God, I wouldn't even know where to start. Probably something really slow because I'm always really uninspiring.
You're so vain. And then, oh, we have another one. Right. I'm going to make you get up and leap into the audience at some point. Right.
She loves it.
Oh, wait, doing a jump. There we go. Right. Hello, my love.
It's aimed at both of you, but I've got a horse and it happens all the way through with dressage. How do you cope with nerves? Because I can have a really good lesson, I can have a really good warm-up, but then it all seems to go to pot once I go down that centre line. So how do you cope with trying to keep the horse going and cope with your nerves and everything else that goes along?
Yeah, I mean, that's a...
There's a reason I call it dressage.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
The thing is, in dressage, is the arena is exactly the same size. It doesn't matter where you are. Doesn't matter. The arena is exactly the same size. You know the test that you're going to do already. And you've just got to think, I'm doing it at home, but just in a different arena. And you're doing exactly the same moves, exactly the same routine that you would do anywhere. It's just in a different environment. And I think you've just got to try and ride it exactly and think about that, really. Everything that you do at home, you just go in on a competition and just do the exact same. I mean, you know, of course we all change when we ride, don't we, in a show, but you've got to try and embrace that and think, actually, that's going to make my competition riding better. You know what I do when I go down that central line is think, yeah, I'm here and I want to impress the judges and the crowd, but I think in dressage, the good thing is the arena is the same size, the test is the same. So actually in dressage, the variables are more controllable than in any other equestrian sport, to be honest.
I think for me, I mean, I can't really talk when it comes to dressage stuff and being confident with that, but it's very nice.
You're not meant to laugh quite so hard at him.
But I think it's very easy as a rider to be trotting around or cantering around the outside of the dressage arena and freeze. And you have to remember that you've got a partner and you have held their hands throughout the entire warm-up. You've held their hands through all the preparation and then you just drop them at the last minute. And you've got to be thinking, okay, so I need to be here for my mate. And so you need to ride more. And so as you're going around the outside of the arena, you need to be working it, lots of transitions, moving the horse around so that you keep your leg there and that you are there to support. And I think that's, for me, like when I get nervous, my leg comes off and I go... And then the horse goes as well. And then, so then you're into a hide into nothing, aren't you? So I think it's really important to stay in the moment and be, and just think of it that you're there supporting your friend and that, and also think that it's, you know, it's just, this is all part of training. Like this is a training thing. Like Richard Davidson always says that to me. I'm like, yeah, whatever, Richard. I was doing a few years ago, I was doing badminton horse trials and before my test, he said, just think, you know, this is just training for you, like for the future. And I was like, what? This is the biggest thing I'm ever going to do. And it's like, it might not be. So this is training.
So
you've got to think about it like mentally that way, which is quite hard to do, I think.
It's actually a great question as well, because, I mean, you're young. You're the glory of British dressage. Badminton Burley, dressage. I used to go to
badminton.
Say,
you're old.
You're old. Yeah. But I am going to get to that. But you'll remember the days where people didn't watch the dressage at badminton and Burley. Now so many people go and watch it. There's a much bigger audience now at dressage than there's ever been. So there is...
That's probably what my grandmother, who is gone a long time ago, she used to go and watch the dressage in the 70s, 80s at badminton and come back and be like, well, they were rubbish. This was really good and that was really good. So I always think there's always somebody like that in the crowd watching. That might be my problem.
Yeah, you've got to not care what they think. But yeah, dressage now, the nationals especially, I've worked at the nationals for years and the crowds now are huge at it. And so whereas back in the day, British dressage, let's face it, I'm going to swear, we were pretty shit.
But I think the level though, you know, over the last 10, 15 years, the level of British dressage has just absolutely flown. And I think you know, with Carl and Charlotte, and since London 2012, and Lottie now, the level has grown unbelievably.
I think that is the case in every sphere of equestrianism, though, don't you think?
Yeah. Sure, absolutely. I mean,
unbelievable standards.
I think it's the last three Olympics, every equestrian team has come back with a medal, and no other sport in the Olympics does that. So yeah. I think for as equestrian, as a sport, I think we're doing a fantastic job.
Right. Any other questions before we ask him what's annoyed him this week? So anyone who hasn't listened to the podcast, most podcasts are very zen and are all about good vibes. On our podcast, we ask everyone what's annoyed them this week.
And Jenny has normally got a massive list of things that are annoyed this week.
You and Ben go on big rants. Like, you are very ranty and you're Simon's normally
tired. You
are
also very ranty.
All right. Pipe down. We've got 3 days together, Simon. Let's not start like this. So it doesn't have to be horsey. What has annoyed you this week?
I think it's just probably people not doing things properly. I think, you know, taking 2 more minutes to do something as to your best ability rather than cutting corners. It could be
I'd really annoy you
in any walk of life. Yeah, just, you know, take a little bit more pride and time and do it better and properly.
Could you go and have a word with my husband, please?
He's very good. He does stuff properly.
He does not do stuff properly. Like, nothing. You'd have thought me and you were married at this corner. No, could you have a word with him? That I totally agree with that. Cutting corners. Have you got a what's annoyed
you
this
week? Yeah, that is true. She doesn't do cutting corners.
No, you've got to do something. Do it properly. Also, on a yard, never walk anywhere empty-handed. That is my one rule with staff.
Yeah, I try and do everything in one go. People have probably seen me on the competition circuit dragging the tack locker and shavings and rugs and everything all in one go. And I'd rather do it in one incredibly difficultly than go back and forth 5 times. Yeah.
Wow.
Organisation.
What's annoyed you this week, Simi?
So I went and got, because I've got this manhole cover on the yard. And it always scares me that the horses are going to slip on it. So I have like a little garden that I put on it. I've got these little flower boxes that I've got. So I went to go and buy a load of winter pansies and violas and some daisies, which will all be, they all go through till April. So I'm very proud of my little, I know it's really
bad. You're proud of your pansies.
I'm really proud of my little garden. Anyway, so I've laid it all out and I've got like, I don't know, there must be about 7 or 8 little boxes, and I've planted them all. And it looks really good. Maggie did help me, and then the next day, all of the daisy heads had gone.
Why?
Because that bloody peacock. We've got a peacock at ours, and the little bugger. Excuse my language, but it's true. He went around and he nipped every single head off, and then when they start growing, then and I'm like, oh, there's another little one just growing through. Oh, well done, mate. Gone within 5 minutes. So the peacock. Yeah, he's going to get a kick at some point soon. But Maggie keeps on throwing things at him whenever he goes anywhere near them.
There we go.
Anyone got any advice about what to do to stop a peacock eating your flowers, then let me
this
know.
This lady's wringing its neck. For goodness gracious.
I can't do that. So when I first went to that place, it was probably about 20 years ago, and he was there then. I can't do that.
Are they not like swans? Don't you have to ask the queen if you can kill them or something?
You can't kill them, can you?
You can't kill swans.
No, I don't think you can.
Wow. Lewis was like, what have I come on to?
I know, I'm so sorry. But it's honestly, it's really annoyed me.
Have you ever had problems with peacocks?
I haven't, but you'll have to ask Carl. He's got a few. So
that is a very good
point. He's got flowers and peacocks, so he's obviously doing something right.
Yes. He's also got a peahen that thinks it's a chicken, which is quite funny.
Yeah, he's got all sorts.
Yeah.
We've got a deer.
Oh, yes. Simon has rescued a baby deer, everyone.
So my partner, he's really like animal orientated. And he's always, these things happen to him. He was driving along and there was a little fawn, probably about that big, tiny little thing that had obviously like been hit by a car or something. It was a bit dazed and its mother was trying to help it. And it was clearly going to like get eaten soon or die. So he picked it up and brought it home. And so it's like last night it was running around the living room with the dogs. So I think it thinks it's a dog now. but it's cute. It's
so the deer
cute.
Now thinks it's a dog.
So you've now got a pet
We've
deer.
Now got a pet. And you
I
can't,
love that.
Apparently, it's illegal to release her. So I think we've got her forever now.
That's awesome.
I mean, but when she first, I don't know if I should be saying this, but when she first arrived and she was in the living room, she was trotting around, then she suddenly just stopped like that. So we were like, oh, she's clearly got something really wrong with her. So it's probably soon enough. No. No,
she turned it to that lady over there. She said she could bring something back.
She's now seems to be okay. So yeah, we seem to have a new addition to the pack.
What have you called her?
James won't let me name her because he knows that I'll get attached.
Name her Peacock.
Well, because I can remember I named a puppy that we had and that went and I was upset.
And you also named the goat.
Yeah, I named the goat. The goat did die.
Yeah, you've had a lot of animals, right, Lewis? What an absolute pleasure it has
Sorry,
been.
Sorry, hang on. Whoa, wait,
what?
What's annoyed you?
What's annoyed? Oh, we've got all day here. I'll do mine later.
But Lewis might like to know.
What's annoyed me? People being rude on aeroplanes. I don't know what it is.
Do you know what? I knew that
or
was going to come.
Really? Probably. People being rude in general.
Yeah, just in like, what is it about when you're on an aeroplane, people suddenly become utter, I'm not going to swear, but if I was on the podcast right now, I would be saying quite a rude word. But I love how loud this lady laughs. This is brilliant. You're like me. No, keep going. It makes me feel like I'm funny. Thank you. But yeah, like I think being an air host must be like quite a hard job because you've got to put up with a lot of people and there's no animals on a plane really. Just people don't say please or thank you and are very demanding and then push you out the way when you're trying. I just think, yeah, people with no manners on an aeroplane, because I've just come over from Canada because I live in Canada. So yeah, it just really stressed me out.
It annoys me when you're on the plane and you're taxiing in. And they say, keep your seatbelts fastened until the aircraft comes to a complete stop. And then it stops. And then all of a sudden, everyone's like, no, up they get. There's all the clicking. I'm like, what are you guys doing? Like, we've got eight. And they're all standing there for half an hour waiting. And then they're, oh, by the way, sorry, the steps aren't here yet. So you're going to have to hold fire for a bit. But everyone still stays standing.
Do you find it more with British people or the Canadians better? Or
I get myself in a lot of trouble here. I think universally people are arseholes. Yeah, I think, yeah. I don't think it really matters.
Doesn't matter nationality.
No, I just think, it just be kind. Like, yeah, I just don't, you never know what kind of a day someone's having. Just be nice. Especially if someone's serving me food as well, I'm going to be ultra nice to that person, because if I was an air hostess, there would have been a few people's meals that I would have spat in on, like, because they were so unbelievably rude.
Be kind, Jenny.
Be kind. You seem like the kind of person that would be unbelievably nice on an aeroplane.
I try to be. I mean, girls, one's perfect, but I try to be, for sure.
Yeah. Right. I feel like the future of British dressage is in very safe hands.
It's looking bright, isn't it?
It is looking very bright. Oh, it is so lovely to meet you. Good luck with your masterclass. Make sure you go and watch Lewis do his masterclass at 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
Thank you very much. Good luck. Give Diego. Is he Diego in the barn, or is that just his show name? Does he have any barn names?
No, just Diego.
Diego. I'm sure there was a few names for him when he was a naughty youngster that we...
Yes, quite a few probably, yeah.
But please, can you join me in giving Lewis a massive round of applause? Thank you for coming on the Sharp and Ride podcast.